Hello, everyone. So this will be my last episode about the church. So I remember being in Southern Baptist Convention affiliated churches in the Deep South, in the Leesburg, Florida community, as a collegiate pupil, college student, layman's terms. And I, at times, had a difficult religiosity moments with them. Meaning, I would try my best not to talk about politics. Sometimes in the church world, they want to feed people after church, and sometimes that's what they would do. And so I would go eat with them because as a college student, I didn't have a regular job. Therefore, as a college student, I didn't make regular money. All the money I had was the ones that my parents would deposit to me at times. So the food at the church was all free. They paid for the food pantries, the catering dishes, so they would take care of everything. And of course, they had the kitchen staff, so it was basically soul food sometimes. It was the kind of food that you see at Jimmy John's and Subway, that type of food. Buffet-style food, like cuisines, so to speak. They normally had that, maybe some Chinese food on the side. They had vegetarian dishes. They had desserts, snacks, light breakfast. The type of breakfast you see in the hotels, it was light. And then they had IHOP style breakfast. They had all kind of food just waiting for you, because they understood in the church that they had food for pescatarians, fish. They had vegan food for vegans. They had vegetarian food for vegetarians. They had meat food for meat lovers, like carnivores. And they had every type of food item you wanted. It was just there. So I would eat enough. I've always had a small stomach. So when I was in that kind of world, from what I do remember, was at times it would get tense. The first 5 minutes would start off really well. We're all laughing and joking at harmless stuff. It could be goofy things we're doing. It could be somebody dancing or getting up, get in the middle of the church kitchen and just start dancing. And sometimes you got chair dancing. Sometimes people would sing classic, like hit music. It could be R&B, pop, rock, the kind of secular music that church people like, and no one saw it as sinful. It's like Michael Jackson type secular music. It could be Motown sound type secular music. It could be country music type secular music. It could be the blues. It could be jazz. Pop, rock, like the late musician Prince, his stuff. It could be, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to call it his stuff because that could be disrespectful, his catalog of music. And I remember just the type of secular music that's uplifting, not the parental advice or explicit type secular music, but the secular music that you could play in a car and that's family friendly. That's the only kind of secular music they liked. So they would sing those type of songs while we were eating together. But after a while, somebody or just a group of multiple of them would start talking politics. And I tried not to talk about it with them because people in the Southern Baptist Convention are predominantly Republican, GOP. the type of people that will watch Newsmax, you know, Fox News, Breitbart, Turning Point USA, Ben Shapiro, Candace Owens, Republican National Convention attendees that would go every year, the type that were staunch conservative Christianity aficionados, as a dictionary word for fans, biblical orthodoxy, right-wing theology types. And I was very quiet. I would go from being very outgoing because we're talking about harmless stuff. I'm like, okay, we're bonding well. We're having spiritual intimacy with one another. Like, okay, my spirit is at peace with your spirit. We're all participating in harmless joking, harmless laughing, harmless smiling. And in my mind, we're all being genuine about all three. But when they start talking about politics, I would get very reserved, very introverted, very withdrawn, very much insulated. I felt they were being insular against me. So they would try to provoke me to be in their conversation. I would say, I'm apolitical. I didn't mean to lie. I was political. I just didn't, not in a bad way, but I did have my views. I was just like, well, I'm apolitical. I'm all about the cross. And that was all I would say. And I would just try to tune them out and just focus on eating. I'm like, even though I'm uncomfortable, I'm still super duper hungry. Because sometimes the chopping block at Beacon wouldn't open until around the time they would let church out, in terms of after the 7:30, 7:15 type services, after the 9 something services, after 11 o'clock. When all those three services were let out, that's when the chopping block would open. It would take a while for them to open, but by 12, they were open. So at 12, pastor's wrapping up the sermon, and we're going to go eat now. Sometimes they would shorten up the sermon and say, hey, I'll save the rest of the sermon for next week, because I can tell y'all getting restless. You're saying amen as a way for me to be quiet, and you're egging me on as a way for me to hurry up the sermon so we go eat, because we're smelling the food upstairs, even though that all the food and the kitchen staff are downstairs. So after they would let out, they would do a quick prayer, and we all rush down to the kitchen because we're all starving. So when I would eat and say, hey, I'm apolitical, I just focus on the cross, they all looked at me strangely, and I was trying to not look at them because I'm uncomfortable. And they would say, Antonio, what are your thoughts? It's okay to share your thoughts. And I would go, Jesus is it for me. I don't want to get involved in that. And then, before I could take a bite, some would get up and come near me. And I'm terrified, because I'm like, I know y'all are gun owners because y'all are open about it. And I'm tensing up. I'm like, I'm thinking to myself, are y'all trying to fight me in church? I'm staying out of the political debates, political arguments that they would have in the church with each other. And in my mind, if I'm just focused on the cross, how can you be mad at me? Like, we're all supposed to be Christians, right? So if I'm just focused on the cross, that means, according to biblical theology, according to theological conservatism how am I living a demonic life when I'm making it clear the demonic realm, the devil, has nothing to do with me? I'm trying to enjoy what we have. So these are my thoughts at the time. I was thinking these things, but when they would approach me and I would look at them scared, like, okay. I wouldn't say anything because I'm looking at them as if to say, okay, what is your next move? And they said, you know, Antonio, I really want you to be yourself. Just know that how you feel, we won't judge you at all. And so I started speaking. I said, well, when you're from D.C., you know how people from the deep south feel about D.C. people. And I just tried to leave it at that. And they said, ooh, you know what? Let's talk about Antonio being from D.C. So now I'm extra terrified. I'm like, I'm thinking to myself, these people have guns in their homes. They might try to shoot up me, my dorm. They might try to hold me for ransom. I know how the Deep South work. I didn't mean to stereotype Deep South, but I heard a lot of these Deep South horror stories, especially from the days of slavery, Jim Crow, etc. So they talked about and they asked me, is your family Democrat? And I'm just like, I'm stammering and I'm struggling to speak and my anxiety is really at its within, and I was hyperventilating the moment, and they all got up, hugged me to calm me down. They were just like kind of holding me, not in a violent way, but in a, you know, it's okay, you know, it's okay. So after a while, I calmed down, and you know, once they got to their seat, once I was able to just get breath back in my body, because I looked like I was having a panic attack. It looked like I was having a stroke. I didn't have a stroke, but it looked like it did. It looked like I had a seizure, but I didn't have a seizure. It looked like I had a panic attack, but I wasn't going through a panic attack. But I looked like I had all the symptoms, but just those things were happening to me. And I was able to answer the question, and then after I said yes, they looked at me as if to say, I know there's more in you to say. And I said, well, to be honest, I didn't want to bring up politics because I know that politics and the Bible don't always have a good relationship. And I didn't want y'all to put me in hell because of the Democrat family I come from. And then they looked at me as if to say, keep speaking. And I'm getting more nervous, but I'm like, okay, I'm just talking till they say something. That was my mentality. So I remember talking and I said, well, you know, race relations aren't always good either. And I'm having a hard time being in the Deep South because of all this stuff. And they started speaking right away. I remember them saying, you know, Antonio, we will never put you in hell. We're all going to go to the same heaven. And they said, we love your family. And we know that you love our family. And then they said, as for politics, it was, you know, hey, I don't have a problem with you and your family. I know you don't have a problem with my family. And I just remember feeling relieved. I didn't say much. I just accepted what they said and kept eating. And so from time to time in the conversation, you know, from time to time when I was there with them, they would just say encouraging words. The typical encouraging words you hear from a person that shows any kind of empathy back. And so I got up and went home. Because I was able to walk at first. I remember the first time that happening. I was like, nah, I don't need a ride. I'm, you know, I'm 3 blocks away because of my dorm at the time. So the second time it happened, when they brought up politics, this was a couple of months later when they decided, hey, let's have food in the church again like we did next time. What I tried to do was, I was like, okay, that in my mind, this is the first time. I remember that whole day, they were like, Antonio, we got to continue the conversation like we did the other time. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm okay, guys. Thank you. Thank you for the kind words of the day. Can we talk about something else? And they're like, you know, but we really need to talk about what we talk about, you know, a couple months back, because I thought about you and what you said all this time, every day. And I wanted to have a better understanding of you and your family because you're educating me. And so that was all they talked about the second time. When they tried to bring it up as if to put me in the conversation, I remember looking at my phone and going, I have papers. I have college papers to go do. So I got up to quickly leave, because by that time I was finished with my plate. The second time the first time I didn't fully finish my plate, so they wrapped it up for me, and that's when I went back to my dorm that day. The second time, I remember that they I was fully finished with my plate. The meal was good, more soul food. It was lunchtime again. So I quickly got up to leave, and they blocked me from leaving. They got up quick and got in front of me. They all did. Because they knew that something wasn't right. And the way I went about it, as soon as I finished my plate, that's when they started to talk about the politics again. So I looked at my phone really fast. College papers. Yeah, let me go finish that tonight. And I got to cut it short. I love y'all. And I got my stuff, my luggage, and I was about to bolt out the door. But they all blocked my entrance. And immediately since they blocked my entrance, they stood in front of me. I started crying, weeping. And I was brokenhearted because in my mind, I'm trying not to talk about it. It's too painful. And I remember saying those exact words to them, and they knew what it meant, like politics and race. And so what they did was, from that point forward, they all made sure to be very gentle with those subjects. They all look at me to make sure, are you offended? Are you okay? Da 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 da. And I would tell them the truth. So if it got too much, they would stop. If they're like, okay, this conversation going so far so good, could they keep talking? They would always check in with me. And everybody was white. Oftentimes, I was the only black person of color in the white Southern Baptist church cosmos. My white church experiences, well, predominantly white church experiences, wasn't always rosy. Because in other churches I was in that were white Southern Baptist churches, I remember sometimes the pastor would preach Southern Christianity in the sermons. And I didn't know how, I was too paralyzed to leave. Spiritually, I felt that paralysis, spiritual paralysis. And so sometimes the members would ask me, how did you feel about what was said? And I didn't focus on the political part in the mother churches. I focused on the theological part. Okay, yeah, Jesus is the Savior. Therefore, we have to not to be self-controlled, self-disciplined people. I focused on those parts of the theology. The other stuff was mostly bringing in the Tea Party into the church, for lack of a better terminology. And they would ask me, what about that part, that part? I would go, I respect y'all, and that would be it. I didn't say that that would be it part, but I did say I respect y'all. We're all God's children in this in his church. I tried to keep a low profile on that because my spirit was rattled by, why are we bringing political ideology and making it political theology? But I didn't feel comfortable talking to them about these things. And they could sense that. And they would get really adamant. What did you... And at first, I would get shaken up, like... And at them, get kind of shaken up in a very much shock way. And I'm like... I would tell them, why are you coming at me like this? We're cool with each other. And sometimes they go, and sometimes they would change course. Other times they didn't. I have to kind of cut it short and go home, and they would follow me. And I would say, I can't. We'll talk next week. I got something to do. They would still follow me. I'm like, and I would say again, kindly, I really have something to do. I have to put the finishing touches on my paper to turn it in to my professor tomorrow. I'm not blowing you off. We will talk next week. And they'll follow me a little bit more. And I'm trying not to show my frustration. And they would go, but, okay, can you just at least give me a little bit more before you go? Like, how you really felt? And I remember saying something along the lines of, I would say something like, well, I'm about the kingdom of God and all that it stands for. And that's all I would give them. And I just turned and went to my dorm. Next week, I remember they saw me and wanted to start the conversation. And they would get very tense. They're like, well, they start asking, do you have a paper, today to finish? And I would say, next month, but I'm okay. Great, because I want to know all your views before we leave. And sometimes these were white women. again, I was usually the only black person in these predominantly white churches. And I remember saying, man, with all due respect, please not be so adamant about this. I don't mind talking to you, but I don't like arguments and debates. I just like to have constructive conversation. And they were impressed that I was able to be respectful, but they still were more like, but your views are important. Your views are important. I'm like, I know. I understand that. But we have to be careful about how we talk about this, because there's diverse upbringings in church. We got to be mindful of one another. So they asked me, what are your views on, okay, everything the pastor's been saying about the political part? And I would say, ma'am, I'm having a difficult time with that, because when people bring a political party into Christ, that's how you get these political tribalism in the name of Jesus, and that's just not what I do. I don't mind, you know, the conservatism, you know, hey, we all have values that help us to stay good people, so it's okay, you know, to be conservative and everything like that. And before I could say any more, they would chime in, interject, and they would say, you know, Antonio, this is how I grew up. They said, growing up, I was taught that all Democrats are demoncrats and that all liberals are libtards. I'm not even used to talking to black people. You know, the only person that I've ever had a full-length conversation with as black is you. And I remember feeling anxiety. And so I remember they apologized, because they could tell that was hard for me to hear. So I also remember being in the kind of environment where, you know, in talking with them, they said, you know, Antonio, I get the feeling your family is Democrat. And that they're Christian. You can be Christian and Democrat. And I chimed in, and we all both know my family's black. Because they wanted this, they weren't sure if they should say it because of the first statement they made about race. And so they didn't attack me. It was calm, cool, and collected after that. Hugs and, you know, all that stuff. And sometimes they would say, Antonio, I need to have more race conversations with you. More Democrat conversations with you, because, you know, I want to learn more. I want to do my research and learn more, because I don't like completely how I was raised. Because they even told me they had Ku Klux Klan membership, Nazi membership, White Citizen Council membership, skinheads membership in their families, and they were raised to have such hate speech, hate crimes, perspectives about anybody not them. And I remember talking with them, and I said, sometimes members would invite me to their homes, and these white women would. These church women and I, it was strictly platonic. We had basically a "you're my hangout buddy in the Lord" type. Nothing romantic ever happened. Nothing sexual ever happened. Nothing of the typical physical intimacy ever happened. The only physical intimacy was church hugs. That was about it. And I remember being at these members' homes. And I remember they would... talk to me about these conversations of what they would read and study, because it was just so disheartening how they were raised. So we talked about it, and I said, do you still have them in your life? These families with these memberships. They said, actually, when I first met you, the Holy Spirit convicted me to remove them from my life, because I can't love you and be racist. I can't love you and hate and be anti-Semitic. I can't love you and be anti-Catholic. I can't love you and be a homophobe. I can't love you and be transphobic. I can't love you and be lesbophobic. I can't love you and be biphobic. I can't love you and be gayphobic. I can't love you and be femphobic. I can't love you and be queerphobic. I can't love you and hate Middle Easterners, hate refugees, and hate immigrants, and hate foreigners, and hate strangers. I can't love you and be xenophobic. I can't love you and have a white power structure around me. I can't love you and live a white power life. So some of them started reading slave narratives, because they're like, I just want to heal myself, you know, because when I met you, saw you, God convicted me that I needed to heal my upbringing, that I needed to stop this hatred, because they're like, well, how can you fellowship with Antonio and hate him for foolish reasons? They said that's what the Lord told me in my spirit. And so how they removed these relatives of theirs, I remember them telling me, they're like, well, in all actuality, I just moved away, you know, and I asked them where they lived. The family with these memberships, and they said, they lived in the Jacksonville area, like North Florida, family of North Florida. I moved to South Florida, and they don't know where I live, because they said, well, I was visiting church the day we first met, and I decided to move that day, and so that's why you haven't seen me in a few months, because I had to move from my apartment up there to the house I live in down here. It was a group of white women who did that. And I say white because what we're talking about. They came from North. Some had relatives in Alabama, Georgia, Mississippi, Texas, Arkansas, Kentucky, Tennessee, West Virginia, North Carolina, South Carolina, Idaho, North Dakota, South Dakota, Michigan, and they said I was visiting relatives and their hateful views made me think of you, Big Antonio, because I remember coming down here because the Lord told me to go to Leesburg, Florida to go to church. And they said, you know, I have somebody special that I want you to meet. They said that that's what God told them. So they just followed their instincts and they said, when I met you, God said, that's the special person I want you to meet. I want you to pour life and love from me into him. And they did. And they said, in that moment, I decided I will never visit my bigoted relatives ever again. And they didn't. And they all said, you know, I can't live near them because they don't want to change. Because they said growing up as children, they would burn the crosses on the properties of African-American families, Catholic families, Jewish families, LGBTQI plus families, immigrant families, Middle Eastern families. And they would leave these hateful signs and hateful messages, often sprayed with graffiti, on the properties of these families. It could be rental properties, it could be houses of these families. And they would terrorize anybody, not them, and go to their meetings and burn the and light up the cross on fire and call it Early Easter. They called it the Flaming Resurrection. They called it White Power Jesus, is how they referred to the Nazarene. And they told me all these stories. And I barely said anything because the best I could do was just hug them. And we would hold each other for a long time and just hug, and that was it. Then I remember being in other churches where they didn't like me walking to and from church to where my dorm was. They didn't like me just walking to them and walking away. Every time I went to certain churches, they always gave me a ride back to my dorm, which was home at the time. So then they would tell me about how when they were interacting with me, they end up cutting ties with their friends because their friends were uncomfortable with seeing me and them, the women, talk. And the friends were basically saying, how could you betray our heritage by talking to the likes of that? They refer to me as that. That's the equivalent of calling me it. And of course, that was their discriminatory attitudes. Because they had friends who were proud of their Ku Klux Klan heritage. Their friends were proud of their Nazi heritage. Their friends were proud of their White Citizens Council heritage. Their friends were proud of their skinhead heritage. So I remember the white women that I was talking with, being friendly with, they basically said, either you're going to accept him and keep me, or you reject him and lose me. Because I'm not going to argue with you about him. I'm not going to even argue with you at all. And they said, you make the decision right now. So the friends were like trying to yell at them. And the white women said, I'm holding on to him. You got to go. And the white women didn't even give their ex-friends a chance to intervene or interject, because the white women stormed out of anger. So I remember the ex-friends of the white women, they never saw each other again. Never talked to each other again. Because the whole family disowned them, because word got back that, oh, he was talking to a black person. But the white women told me that some of their relatives referred to me as Sambo, Nigga, Blackie, Darkie, Tar Baby. Kunta Kinte. So black you purple. As colored as the nighttime sky. Jigaboo. And a minstrel show. That's what their names were for me. They also called me a sellout and a coon. Porch monkey. Ape. Gorilla. And I didn't meet these people. But basically, the white women, from what they told me, they actually confronted their family and friends, because ex-friends, ex-family were trying to meet up with them. So the white women went back to the states where they were with their family just for the day. And from what the white women told me, it was a vicious brawl. Because the white women had white supporters on their side. And it was just the ex-friends and the relatives. So the white women had the white supporters because they were more and more white people rebelling against the bigotry that they grew up with, because the white women were able to change them, convince them this is not how we're supposed to grow up. How can we say this is our heritage, but Jesus was never about any of these things? And so other white women and white men joined force with the white women, and it was a bloody brawl, and the white women won. The white supporters and the white men who support the white women, oh, they won. They all got into a fight over me. And it was vicious because even though the white women, the white supporters, and the white men all in league with the white women who are empathetic and sympathetic of me, they were like, well, we don't do violence because that's not of Jesus, but, you know, we're going to have to confront you because you were saying all this, you were saying all this racist garbage about Antonio. We going to fight. If you say it again, we going to fight. And they kept making the same racist statements against me. And the Christian white women, the Christian white men, and other Christian white men, all supporting the Christian white women, destroyed the ex-friends and their relatives with their bare hands, and it did not take very long, because the Christian white woman and her Christian white crew destroyed the racist white relatives of theirs and the racist white ex-friends of theirs. And let's just say they were too embarrassed to get medical help and too embarrassed to call the police, because then you have to explain your racism to the police. So what happened was that after that, all the Christian white people just left. Never saw him again or talked to him again. They all met up. I think it was at a racist home. They told me, yeah, we went to a racist home, and all our relatives, our ex-friends, all the racist white people on one side, all the Christian white people on the other side, and they duked it out in the living room. Just went at each other, bloodshed. But the Christian white people barely bled a little bit, but the racist white people, ooh, they look like they were in a boxing match. I mean, knocked their teeth out, busted lip, broken jaw bones, bloody noses, black eyes. Their ears were bit off. They were spat on. They were kicked, like Christian white men kicked them with their boots. And the Christian white women used
their nails to claw them. Used their women's shoes to beat them up with their purses too. And the Christian white men, Christian white women, use inanimate objects, their fists and their feet, to smolder, should I say, demolish the racist white people. So I remember enjoying church with them. In my mind, that's how I felt, like, oh wow, y'all stood up for me, cool. So we had a church relationship, eat together relationship, be at their homes relationship. That was it. There were other churches I had to eventually leave, like the first time, actually. I was visiting churches sometimes in that time period. And they called themselves the religious right. When I first encountered them, I'm like, oh, y'all the religious wrong. Because here's the truth. Anybody that did not believe in creationism and public education, anybody that did not believe in school prayer, anybody that did not believe in temperance, anybody that did not believe in Christian nationalism, anybody that did not believe in Christian Zionism, anybody that did not believe in Sunday Sabbatarianism, anybody that supported biological evolution, anybody that supported embryonic stem cell research, anybody that supported LGBTQI+ rights, anybody that supported comprehensive sex education, anybody that supported abortion, anybody that supported euthanasia, anybody that supported use of drugs, anybody that supported pornography, anybody that supported marijuana, anybody that was against Christian homeschooling, anybody that supported evolution, anybody that wasn't in favor of private schooling, anybody that wasn't in favor of absence only sex education, anybody that opposed Sunday blue laws, anybody that did not believe that America was founded by Christians, a Christian nation, anybody that supported separation of church and state, anybody that that supported contraception, anybody that supported human cloning, there was hate speech advocated against all these kinds of people in church. And I remember leaving church in the middle of these statements, like walking out of church while the pastor was preaching. They acted nice towards me in the beginning, and I sat in the back. So as soon as I heard them say what they say, I left. And kind people were able to take me home. I hitchhiked. They're like, hey, you look like you want to ride. Seem like a nice person. So they took me home, where my dorm was. And these are the kind of people that basically, if you weren't a social conservative church person, they hate speech. And they hate speech against those with HIV/AIDS. Along with the hate speech that they were directed LGBTQ plus people when they was talk about the LGBTQ plus grooming conspiracy theory and their hate speech against people who were Democrats, liberals, progressives, the left, libertarians, Green Party, third party, the hate speech against against drag shows, drag kings, drag queens. Pride parades, pride events, gay clubs, lesbian bars, gay bathhouses, lesbian bathhouses, bisexual bathhouses, gay beats, cottaging, hookup sites, hookup apps. And nudists and actress and the hate speech against the rainbow flag, saying they're confiscating it because it was originally the sign of never using the flood to destroy earth and God's covenant with his people. I can't count how many churches I had to walk out of in the middle of the sermon. And I never saw those people again. People invite me to church, and then I would show up. And when they would talk their talk, I would tell the person I had to use the restroom. I lied so I could leave and never come back, and that's what happened. When they would start talking about, hey, LGBTQ plus people are recruiting and molesting children or to make them LGBTQ plus, to leave because you know, it was just really awful. I remember there were some churches where I had to walk out in the middle of the pastor preaching because they promoted prosperity theology. They promoted the Republican Party is the only party that fully represents Jesus. And if Jesus were alive, he would be a Republican and he would be right wing too. And I remember they started espousing Fox News talking points, Newsmax talking points, Breitbart, Turning Point USA type of talking points. They started speaking highly of Donald Trump, and they started speaking awful about Obama,
and how he's the enemy of the cross and how Trump's a friend of the cross. And I remember that they even started they started demonizing the secular movement, demonizing atheists, and accusing liberal theology and religious liberalism, religious progressivism as being agents of the devil. And they were demonizing science, mathematics, other religions, and secular people. They were demonizing denominations of all the other religions and any denomination that wasn't theirs in terms of Christianity. And they were doing the Pat Robertson conspiracy theories of, you know, especially if you had sexually transmitted diseases, sexually transmitted infections. Oh man. And you know, they started, they were espousing white supremacy from the pulpit. Espousing misogyny from the pulpit. Espousing classism from the pulpit, espousing texturism and colorism from the pulpit. Demonizing the poor with their poor phobia from the pulpit. They demonized anybody that had strong opposition of socially conservative and traditionalist policies. They demonized anybody that did not seek to influence politics and public policy with the religious rites interpretation of the teachings of Christianity. Anybody that opposed conservative Christianity, conservative theology, theological conservatism, traditional Christianity, and biblical orthodoxy, they demonized. They demonized anybody of liberal Christianity, progressive Christianity. They were seen as heretical heterodoxies by the theological conservatives. So that's the world of evangelical Christianity I witnessed. And before by my senior year, I left the church. So I didn't start going back to church. Just I lived with my parents, and now I'm not in anybody's house of worship throughout the week. I'm not in anybody's house of worship on the weekend, so I am unchurched, non-churched, and de-churched. Because they also demonized autism. They demonized autism rights, calling us demon possessed. So they're espousing ableism from the pulpit, saying that vaccines cure autism and that prayer cures autism and that studying for hours makes you learn fast. Therefore, the autism is gone. And they said that exorcisms are the best cure for autism. And they honestly think, and they honestly thought, I would still be in church today. They were sadly, tragically mistaken. Because when it came to them, I was badly forsaken. They even preached that the curse of Ham made people black skin. They said the curse of Ham is why black people exist. The phrase den of thieves describes them perfectly. Even tried to make a Christian case for voter suppression in the name of xenophobia. In the name of Jim Crow. Other reasons why I left and never went back. Because they're the ones, like the Romans, flogging Jesus in the back.